can take a licking and kick on ticking, but the only thing ticking right now is my heart, at double time. I don't know how the hell to handle this. Sabrina said she couldn't have a kid, and I plan to support whatever she decides, but I want her to include me, damn it. It rips me apart to think of her going through this alone. She needs me. You making something to eat or just staring at the stove for funsies? Garrett's voice drives me out of my misery. My roommate strolls into the kitchen with Logan on his tail. Both guys make a beeline for the fridge. Seriously, Logan gripes as he peers into the refrigerator. Feed us, Tuck. There's nothing edible here. Yeah, I haven't shopped for groceries all week. When you live in a house full of hockey players, skipping out on the shopping is bad news. I stare at the empty pot I'd placed on the burner. I didn't have a menu in mind when I wandered into the kitchen, and with the sad assortment of ingredients we have on hand, there's not much I can work with. I guess I'll make some pasta, I say glumly. Carbs at this hour isn't the smartest idea, but beggars can't be choosers. Thanks, Mom. I cringe at the word Mom. You might as well have said Dad, as in, I might be a fucking dad. I draw a calming breath and fill the pot with water. Logan beams at me. Don't forget to put on your apron. I give him the finger on my way to the pantry. One of you lazy asses make yourself useful and chop some onions, I mutter. On it, Garrett says. Logan flops down at the kitchen table and watches us like a jerk as we prepare a late dinner. Make enough for five, he tells us. Dean's working one-on-one with Hunter tonight. The kid might come back here with him. Garrett glances at me in amusement. Nah, I think we'll only make enough for four, right, Tuck? If Hunter's here, he can take Logan's spot. Awesome idea. Our roommate rolls his eyes. I'll tell Coach you're trying to starve me. You do that, Garrett says graciously. I set the pot on the burner. While I wait for the water to boil, I scrounge around in the crisper for anything green. I find one pepper and two carrots. Whatever. Might as well chop them and throw them in the sauce. We chat about nothing in particular as we prepare dinner. Or rather, they chat. I'm too busy internally freaking out about Sabrina. I guess that's a testament to my acting skills because my roommates don't seem to notice that anything is out of the ordinary. I'm about to dump two packages of penne into the boiling water when Garrett's phone rings. It's Coach, he says, sounding slightly confused. I set the pasta on the counter instead of in the pot and watch as Garrett takes the call. I don't know why, but there's a nervous feeling crawling up my spine. Coach Jensen doesn't usually phone us off hours for no reason. Garrett's team captain, but it's not like he's getting nightly calls from the man. Hey, Coach, what's up? Garrett listens for a moment. His dark eyebrows knit, and then he speaks again warily. I don't understand. Why did Pat ask you to call me? He listens again for much longer this time. Whatever Coach Jensen is telling him, it's turning Garrett's complexion to paste. By the time he hangs up, he's as white as the walls. What's wrong? Logan demands. He doesn't miss Garrett's change in demeanor either. Garrett shakes his head, looking stunned. Bo Maxwell died. What? Logan freezes. I drop the spatula I'm holding. It clatters to the floor, and in the silence of the kitchen, it sounds like an explosion from a war film. We all flinch at the noise. I don't pick up the spatula. I just stare at Garrett, stupidly asking, What? Bo Maxwell died. He continues to shake his head over and over again, as if he can't make sense of the words coming out of his own mouth. What do you mean he died? Logan growls in outrage. Is this some kind of sick joke? Our team captain braces both hands on the counter. He's actually shaking. I don't think I've ever seen Garrett lose his cool like this. Coach just got off the phone with Pat DeLuca, Bo's coach. Pat said Bo died. Without a word, I turn off the stove and stumble over to the kitchen table. I sink into the first chair I collide into and rub my fists over my forehead. This isn't happening. How? Logan snaps. When? He sounds angry, but I can tell it's all shock. Logan and Bo are close. Not as close as Dean and Beau, but... Oh, Jesus, Dean. Someone needs to tell Dean. Last night, Garrett's voice is barely above a whisper. Car accident. He was in Wisconsin for his grandmother's birthday. Coach said the roads were icy. Beau's dad was driving the car and he swerved to avoid hitting a deer. The car flipped over and flew off the road and... His words are choked now. Beau broke his neck and died. Oh, sweet Jesus. Horror swirls in my gut like poison. Across from me, Logan is blinking back tears. I'm just sitting there, silent, shocked. I've never had a friend who died before. No relatives, either. My dad passed away when I was too young to really grieve for him. That was a car accident, too. God, why the fuck do we drive cars? In the back of my mind, there's a nagging thought that I should be doing something. I swipe a hand over my stinging eyes and force myself to focus. Sabrina. Fuck, that's what I need to do. I need to call Sabrina and tell her the news. She used to date Beau. She cares about him. Before I can move from my chair, the front door creaks open. The three of us tense up. Dean's home. Fuck, Logan whispers. I'll tell him, Garrett says hoarsely. Dean's blonde head is lowered as he wanders into the kitchen. He's engrossed with his phone, his fingers tapping out a text message, probably to Allie. He doesn't notice us at first, but even when he does, I don't think he's registering our expressions. What's up? He says in an absent-minded tone. When none of us say a word, Dean frowns and puts the phone away. His gaze lands on Logan, and he stiffens when he sees our friend's tears. What's going on? He demands. Logan wipes his eyes. I press my lips together. Seriously, if someone doesn't tell me what's going on right this fucking second, Coach called. Garrett interrupts in a low voice. He just got off the phone with Patrick DeLuca and, Dean looks confused. Garrett keeps talking, though I wish he wouldn't. I wish we didn't have to tell Dean about Beau. I wish we didn't even know about Beau. I wish lots of things. But right now, wishes mean shit. I guess DeLuca called him because he knows we're friends with Beau. This is about Maxwell? What about him? Logan and I both stare at our hands. Garrett has more courage than us because he doesn't shy away from Dean's anxious gaze. He, died. Just like that, Dean falls into a trance. It's painful to watch, and I have no idea how to draw him out of it. Garrett repeats what he told Logan and me, but it's obvious our teammate isn't listening. Dean's green eyes are glazed, his mouth parted slightly as he sucks in uneven breaths. It's only when Garrett says that Beau died on impact that Dean blinks himself back to reality. Can you tell it to me again? He croaks. What happened, I mean? God damn it, why? Because I need to hear it again. Dean is adamant. We watch as he marches to the cupboards and grabs a bottle of whiskey from the top one. He takes a deep swig right out of the bottle before staggering over to sit beside us. Garrett starts talking again. Christ. I don't know if I can hear this awful story again. Dean passes me the whiskey and I take a small sip before passing it to Logan. I can't get wasted right now. I plan on driving tonight. Once Garrett is finished, Dean pushes his chair back and stands up. He clutches the Jack Daniels bottle in both hands like it's a security blanket. Going upstairs, he mumbles. Dean, I start, but our teammate is already gone. We hear footsteps climbing the stairs, a thump, a door clicking shut. Silence falls over the kitchen. I have to leave, I mutter to Garrett and Logan, unsteadily rising to my feet. Neither of them ask where I'm going.
Sabrina. I stare at Tucker, unable to comprehend what he's saying. When he texted to say he was coming to Boston to see me tonight, I expected a serious discussion about our unplanned pregnancy. I panicked, told him I was studying, and he all but said, tough shit. I think his exact message was, I'm coming, we're talking. The entire hour I was waiting for him, I gave myself pep talk after pep talk. I ordered myself to put on my big girl pants and deal with this pregnancy the way I deal with everything else in my life. Head on. I reminded myself that Tuck had said, "I've got you," that he'd support whatever I chose to do. But none of that had succeeded in ridding me of the fear clinging to my throat. Now the fear is even worse for a whole other reason. Beau is dead? My heart pounds dangerously fast. I'm scared it's going to give out on me. I'm scared of the grief I see in Tucker's eyes.
Yes. He's gone, darling.
I can't understand it. I can't. Bo is Breyer's starting quarterback. Bo is my friend. Bo's dimples always pop out when he's flashing you a particularly naughty grin. Bo is... dead. A car accident, apparently. His father survived, but Bo died. The tears I've been fighting spill over and stream down my cheeks in salty rivulets. I try to breathe between sobs, but it's hard, and eventually I'm hyperventilating. That's when Tucker wraps me up in a warm, tight embrace.
"Breathe,"
he whispers into my hair. I try, I really do, but the oxygen isn't getting in.
"Breathe."
Firmer this time, and his hands are moving up and down my back in comforting sweeps. I manage to take a breath, and then another, and another, until I'm not feeling quite so dizzy. The tears are still falling, though, and my chest feels like someone sliced it open and is poking it with a hot blade. "He's..." I gulp. "Was. He was such a good guy, Tuck."
"I know."
"He was good and young, and he shouldn't be dead," I say fiercely.
"I know."
"It's not fair."
"I know."
Tucker holds me tighter. I burrow against him until there's nowhere left to go. His strong, solid body is the anchor I need right now. It allows me to cry and curse and rail at the world because I know Tuck is here, listening to me and steadying me and reminding me to breathe. A loud knock causes both of us to jump.
"Keep it down in there,"
comes Ray's horrible voice.
"The hell am I supposed to watch the game if I can hear you bawling all the way from the living room? You on the rag or something?"
A strangled sob flies out of my mouth. Oh, God. Nothing like an interruption from Ray to highlight what an emotional mess I am. An emotional mess who isn't having her period, because she's goddamn pregnant. My breathing grows shallow again. Tucker keeps stroking my back as he answers my stepfather.
"If you can't hear the TV, turn up the volume,"
he calls tightly. There's a beat, then,
"Is that you, jock boy? Didn't realize Rena had company."
"We walked right past him when you let me in,"
Tucker mutters to me. "Yeah, we had. But Ray's drunker than usual tonight. He spent the whole day at a sports bar with his buddies, getting loaded while they watched the afternoon football games. He could barely walk in a straight line when he got home this evening," I mutter back. Ray pipes up again, slurring like crazy.
"Must not be too good in the sack if you're making the bitch cry."
I grab Tucker's arm before he can stand up. "Ignore him," I whisper. Then I raise my voice and address Ray.
"Go watch your game. We'll keep it down."
After another beat, his footsteps thump away. Tears stain my face as I nestle against Tucker again. "Will you?" I clear my aching throat. "Will you stay with me tonight?"
"Not even a question,"
he murmurs before dropping a soft kiss on my forehead.
"I'm here for as long as you need me, baby."
Chapter 20. Tucker. The stadium is a sea of black and silver. Thousands of people are in attendance, and a good number of them wear Breyer football jerseys beneath their unzipped coats. Those who aren't wear the school colors. On the field, a large stage has been raised, where Bo's teammates and family sit. Alumni flew in from all over the country to honor our fallen quarterback. Kids who didn't even know Bo are here. Faces are somber, and the mood is subdued. It's fucking awful. I'm sitting in the bleachers behind the home bench with Garrett on my left, Hannah's beside him, then Logan and Grace, then Allie, who's alone. Dean has been a total mess this week. He's in a destructive spiral, skipping practices and locking himself in his room, drunk out of his mind most of the time. The other night he got so high that he passed out on the living room couch, half his body on the cushions, the others sprawled on the floor. Logan carried him upstairs while Allie trailed after them, near tears. I keep wanting to reassure Allie that Dean will get through this, but honestly, my mind has been all over the place this week. The reason for my anguish is sitting on my other side. I don't think Garrett and the others even realize Sabrina's here. Their gazes are fixed on the field, where a huge projection screen is showing highlights from Bo's 4 years at Briar University. Actually, make that 5 years. Bo redshirted his freshman year, so this is technically his fifth year. Was his fifth year. Lord, it's hard to remember that he's actually gone. It's cold out, so the sleeve of my bulky coat kind of disguises that I'm clutching Sabrina's hand. I want to put my arm around her, kiss her cheek, hold her close, but I don't think Bo's memorial is the time to be announcing our relationship to the world. It's surreal to me, though, that the girl next to me is pregnant with my child and nobody has a clue. We haven't spoken about the baby at all. I don't know if Sabrina is planning on scheduling a procedure. Hell, for all I know, she's already gone through with it. I'd like to think that she'd include me if and when the time comes, but she's been so distant this week. Bo's death hit her hard, and witnessing what it's done to Dean makes me even more hesitant to push Sabrina to talk. Not when she's dealing with the loss of a friend. A quiet sob sounds from a few seats over. It's Hannah. The choked noise alerts me to the fact that the slideshow of Bo's life has ended. His older sister, Joanna, is rising from her seat. I tense up, because I know things are about to get even more heartbreaking. Joanna's a beautiful woman, with a chin-length dark bob and blue eyes like Bo's. Those eyes are so lifeless right now. Her face is haunted. So are the faces of her parents. In her simple black dress, she sinks onto the bench of a black grand piano on the other side of the stage. I was wondering about the piano, and now I have my answer. Joanna Maxwell was a music major when she went to Briar, landing a job on Broadway right after graduation. Anna says she's an incredible singer. I wince as microphone feedback screeches through the stadium. Sorry. Joanna murmurs, then adjusts the mic and leans closer. I don't think many of you know this, but my brother was actually a pretty good singer. He wouldn't dare to sing in public, though. He had his bad boy reputation to maintain, after all. Laughter ripples through the bleachers. It's eerie, combined with the wave of grief hanging over us. Anyway, Bo was a big music buff. When we were little, we would sneak into our dad's den and mess around with his record player. She sheepishly glances at her father. Sorry you're just finding that out now, Daddy. But I swear we didn't break into the liquor cabinet. She pauses. At least not until we were older. Mr. Maxwell shakes his head ruefully. Another wave of laughter washes through the stands. We love listening to the Beatles. She adjusts the mic again and poises her fingers over the ivory keys. This was Bo's favorite song, so... Her voice cracks. I thought I would sing it for him today. My heart aches as the first strains of Let It Be fill the stadium. Sabrina clutches my hand tighter. Her fingers are like ice. I squeeze them, hoping to warm her up, but I know mine are equally cold. By the time Joanna finishes singing, there isn't a dry eye in the bleachers. I'm rapidly blinking back tears, but eventually I give up and let them stream down my cheeks without wiping them away. Afterward, Joanna gracefully rises from the piano bench and rejoins her parents. Then come the speeches, and the tears only fall harder. Coach DeLuca gets behind the podium and talks about what a talented player Bo was, his dedication, his strength of character. A few of his teammates speak, making us laugh again with stories about Bo's shenanigans in the locker room. Bo's mom thanks everybody for coming, for supporting her son, for loving him. I feel ravaged when the memorial finally reaches its conclusion. Sorrow thickens the air as people shuffle out of their seats and make their way down the aisles. Sabrina releases my hand and walks ahead of me. Hope and Karen sandwich her between them like two mother hens, each one wrapping an arm around her shoulders as the trio descends the steps. On the landing, I come up behind her and lean in to murmur in her ear. Want me to come to Boston tonight? She gives a slight shake of her head, and disappointment and frustration flood my stomach. She must see it in my eyes because she bites her lip and whispers, "We'll talk soon, okay?" "Okay," I whisper back. With my heart in my throat, I watch her walk away. What was that about? Garrett appears beside me, focusing on Sabrina's retreating back. Just offering my condolences, I lie. That's Sabrina James. She used to date Beau. Oh, he frowns. Dean's Sabrina? My Sabrina. I choke down another rush of frustration and offer a careless shrug. I guess. I'm sick of this. So fucking sick of it. I want to tell my friends about Sabrina. I want to tell them about the baby and get their advice. But she made me promise not to say a word until we'd made a decision. And again, if that decision results in no baby, there'd be no point in telling them anyway. What would I even say? I knocked someone up, but she had an abortion, so there's nothing to talk about? I swallow through my suddenly dry mouth. I have no idea how I got to this place. My friends tease me about being a Boy Scout, and truthfully, I thought I had the be prepared thing down pat. But one careless mistake, and now I might be a father. I'm 22, for fuck's sake. I don't know if I can do this. Panic bubbles in my throat. I'm a patient guy, rock solid, good head on my shoulders. I want to have a family someday. I want kids, and a wife, and a dog, and a goddamn picket fence. I want all that. Someday. Not today. Not 9 months from now. Not, you might not have a choice. Christ. Come on, Garrett says, gently nudging me forward. We're all going back to the house. Swallowing my panic, I let my friends herd me out of the stadium and into the parking lot. I rode to campus with Garrett and Hannah, so I climb into the back seat of Garrett's Jeep. Allie slides in beside me. The four of us don't say a single word during the drive home. The moment we walk through the front door, Allie hurries upstairs to Dean's room. I still can't believe he skipped out on Beau's memorial, but I get the feeling Dean hasn't experienced much loss in his life. I don't think he knows how to handle it, and I find myself praying that Allie can get through to him. The rest of us ditch our coats and boots and traipse into the living room. Hannah and Grace make some coffee, and we sit in silence for a while. It's like we all have PTSD or something. We've lost a friend and can't make sense of it. Eventually, Garrett loosens his tie and then tugs it off, dropping it on the arm of the couch. With a weary sigh, he says, "Graduation is in a few months." Everyone nods, though I'm not sure if it's in agreement or just a form of acknowledgement. He glances around the living room, his expression going sad. "I'm gonna miss this house." "Yeah, me too. I still have no idea where I'll be in May. The plan was to move back to Texas, but there's no way I can do that when there's so much uncertainty between me and Sabrina. Granted, by May, I'll already have an answer about the baby. I looked it up online, so I know that if Sabrina chooses to have an abortion, her window will end in early March." I swallow a strangled groan. God, I hate not knowing where I stand, where we stand. "I'm excited to go apartment hunting," Hannah says, but despite her words, there isn't a trace of excitement in her voice. "We'll find something great," Garrett assures her. She glances at Grace. "You guys are still looking for something halfway between Hastings and Providence?" Grace nods and snuggles closer to Logan, who's tenderly running his fingers through her long hair. Envy ripples through me. They have no idea how lucky they are that they can actually make plans for their futures. Garrett's agent is in negotiations with the Bruins, which means Garrett and Wellesley will be living in Boston once he signs with the team. Grace still has 2 more years at Briar, but Logan's already signed with the Bruins farm team, so he'll be playing in Providence until he's hopefully called up to the pros. And me? Who the fuck knows? Are you heading back to Texas right after graduation or sticking around for the summer? Logan's question brings a knot of discomfort to my chest. I'm not sure yet. It all depends on what kind of business opportunities there are. No, it all depends on whether my girlfriend is going to have my baby. But the other thing is true too, I guess. I still think you should open a restaurant, Hannah teases. You could come up with fun Tucker-related names for all your dishes. I shrug. Nah, I don't want to be a chef. And I don't want the stress of owning such a high-pressure business. Restaurants are constantly closing down. It's too big of a risk. I plan on being careful with my dad's insurance money. I've been saving it for years, and I'm not sure I want to gamble it all on a restaurant. But it's not like I have any other ideas either. I'd better come up with something, though, and fast. Graduation is looming. Real life is beckoning. My girl is pregnant. A million decisions need to be made, but at the moment I'm in limbo. I can't make a single decision, not until Sabrina makes the most important one of all.
Chapter 21. Sabrina. February. There's a bitter chill in the air as I walk down the snow-lined path in Boston Common. My gloved hands are buried in the pockets of my coat, and my red knit hat is pulled so low on my forehead it nearly covers my eyes. It's so cold out today. I suddenly regret suggesting that Tucker and I meet in the park. He wanted to meet at my house, but both Nana and Ray are home, and I couldn't risk them eavesdropping on us and finding out about the pregnancy. I haven't told them yet. I haven't told anyone. I assume Tucker is going to bring up the baby from the word go, but when I reach Brewer Fountain 5 minutes later, the first thing he says to me is, I hate fountains. All right. Any particular reason why?
They don't have much of a purpose.
Then he tugs me into his arms for a long hug, and I find myself sagging against him, clinging to his warm, solid body. I haven't seen him since Beau's memorial. That was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks. I swear, John Tucker has the kind of patience I can only dream of having. He hasn't bugged me to meet up, hasn't pushed me to talk about our situation, hasn't done anything but stand by and follow my lead. But they're pretty, I murmur in response to his remark. His lips brush mine in a brief kiss.
Not as pretty as you.
And then he hugs me tighter, and I try hard not to burst into tears. I'm a hormonal mess lately, constantly on the verge of sobbing, and I don't know if it's the pregnancy or because I miss Tuck. I miss him so fucking much it breaks my heart, but I don't know what to say when I'm with him. I don't fucking know what to do. The hug finally breaks up, and we both step back awkwardly. A dozen questions flicker in his expression, but he doesn't voice a single one. Instead, he says,
Let's walk. If we stay on the move, maybe we won't freeze to death.
Laughing again, I allow him to sling his arm around me and we take off down the path, our boots crunching over the thin layer of snow beneath them.
How are classes going?
He asks gruffly. Okay, I guess. I'm lying. It's not okay at all. I'm finding it impossible to concentrate on anything other than the subtle changes in my body. You? He shrugs.
Not great. It's been tough to focus ever since.
He trails off. Ever since this? I gesture to my stomach.
Yeah, and Beau too. Dean's not doing too great and there's lots of tension in the house.
I'm sorry.
It'll get better.
Is all he says. God, I wish I had his faith, and his resilience, and his courage. I'm lacking all those things right now. Just the thought of opening my mouth and bringing up the pink or blue baby elephant in our vicinity makes me want to throw up. Or maybe that's the morning sickness. But as usual, Tucker doesn't push the subject. He simply changes it.
Did you come here a lot when you were growing up?
He gestures at the beautiful display of nature all around us. When I was little, I admit, back when it was just me and my mom and Nana, would come here every weekend. I learned how to skate on Frog Pond. He gave me a sidelong look.
You don't talk about your mom much.
There's nothing to talk about. Resentment crawls up my throat. She wasn't around much. I mean, she used to make an effort when I was really young, up until I was 6, maybe. But then the men in her life became more important than me. Tucker's gloved hand squeezes my shoulder.
I'm sorry, darling.
It is what it is. I glance over at him. You're close with your mother, right? He nods.
She's the best woman I know.
Emotion clogs my throat. Tucker might have lost his dad at a young age, but obviously his mother did everything she could to make up for that. From what he's told me, she worked her butt off so her son could have a good life. My own mother could take a few lessons from Mrs. Tucker. So could Nana. Our childhoods were so different, I find myself saying.
And yet we both grew up to be awesome people.
Him, maybe. Me, I don't feel so awesome right now. But I keep the thought to myself. Does your mom want you to move back to Texas after college?
Yeah.
He stops in the middle of the path, releasing a tired-sounding breath. Do you want to move back? I ask, then hold my breath as I wait for his reply.
I don't know.
He rakes a hand through his auburn hair, and I track the motion of his hand. His hair looks so soft to the touch. It is soft to the touch. I know this because I've run my fingers through it on many occasions. I want to do it again now, but I'm scared that if I touch him, I won't be able to stop.
My plan was always to go back after graduation. I want to be close to my mom, take care of her, you know? But when I was there for the holidays...
He groans softly.
There are no opportunities in Patterson. None. It's a tiny town that hasn't grown at all in 100 years. And I wouldn't even be able to commute to Dallas because it's a 4-hour drive. I originally thought I'd live in Dallas during the week and stay in Patterson on the weekends, but that sounds exhausting the more I think about it.
So what are you going to do?
I have no clue.
I wait for him to turn it around on me and ask me what I'm going to do about this baby, but he doesn't.
You want to go watch the skaters for a bit?
He suggests. Sure. We start walking again. His arm is still around me. His familiar scent wafts into my nostrils and makes me ache. I want to kiss him. No, I want to drag him back to wherever he parked his truck and maul him. I want to feel his lips on mine and his hands on my breasts and his cock moving inside me. The happy squeals of children greet us before we even reach the pond. A bittersweet feeling washes over me as we approach the railing. Dozens of people whiz past us on the shiny surface of the rink. Kids bundled up in colorful coats and scarves and mittens, families skating together, couples gliding hand in hand. Tucker reaches for my hand and laces our gloved fingers together, and we stand there watching the rink for a while. My heart skips because it feels like we're a real couple. Just two happy people spending the afternoon in the park, enjoying each other's company.
Oh, shit. See that man over there?
Tucker suddenly says. I follow his gaze toward a tall, gray-haired man in a blue parka and black skates. Yeah? Do you know him? He squints.
No. For a second I thought I did, but he's just a lookalike.
For who? I ask curiously.
Coach Death.
I almost choke on my tongue. Okay, let's back this up. Did you just say Coach Death? His boom of laughter tickles the side of my face.
Yep, not even joking, darling. My very first hockey coach was named Paul Death. Apparently it's an old British name, or maybe Welsh, I can't remember now.
I shift around so my back is to the railing. Was he as evil as his name suggests?
Nicest dude you'll ever meet,
Tucker declares.
Seriously? Oh, yeah. He's the first person who told me I had potential. I was 5 at the time. Begged my mom for hockey lessons, so she drove me to this arena an hour away because Patterson doesn't have a rink. Coach Death popped a squat, shook my hand, and said, Yep, I see it, kid. You've got potential.
Tucker chuckles.
That was his catchphrase, yep. I started saying it around the house, and it drove Mom crazy.
I laugh. So Coach Death was your idol growing up?
Pretty much.
He slants his head.
What about you? Who's your idol?
I had 5. I grin at him. They were called NSYNC, His jaw drops.
Oh, no, darling, say it ain't so. You were into boy bands?
So into them, it's not even funny. Nana took me to an NSYNC concert when I was 12. I swear I had my first orgasm that night. He throws his head back and hoots. I told you, it's not funny, I grumble. I was obsessed. I used to doodle Sabrina Timberlake in all my school notebooks.
I honestly can't picture that.
Why not?
Because you're so serious all the time. When I picture you as a kid, I see you reading textbooks for fun and studying for the SATs 4 years in advance.
A wry smile tugs on my mouth. Yeah, I did all that too, but I always made time for Justin. I'd take study breaks and kiss his picture. With tongue. Tucker hoots.
Jesus, Sabrina. I don't know if I can be with you anymore.
Just like that, my good humor fades. Not because of what he said, I know he's joking, but because of the pink or blue elephant, damn it. Tucker and I had only been dating for a few months before this baby bomb. Would we have even had a future? I love being with him. It's easy being with him, easier than it's ever been with anyone. I was starting to see a future for us, but what about him? What if he'd gotten sick of me and wanted to dump me? If we keep this baby, then the future is set. We'll be a part of each other's lives, whether we want to or not, whether he wants it or not.
What's wrong?
He asks in concern. I gulp through the lump in my throat. My face crumples. I haven't made a decision yet. His voice turns hoarse.
I know.
I'm scared. I stare down at my boots. I'm really scared, Tuck.
I know,
he says again. Then he rubs his face.
So am I.
My gaze flies to his. You are?
Are you kidding me? I'm goddamn terrified.
A groan slips out.
I'm trying to be strong for you here, Sabrina. I'm really fucking trying.
I blink back tears. I'm usually the strong one. But right now, I don't feel strong at all. He draws me into his arms, and suddenly we're clinging to each other again. I'm pretty sure everyone on the ice is staring at us, wondering why we're power-hugging like a couple of maniacs, but I don't care. I'm on emotional overload, and maybe that's what drives me to say, I don't think I want to keep it. Tucker eases back slightly. His expression is somber.
Are you sure?
No.
Then you need to take some more time to think about it,
he says softly.
Okay?
Okay, I mumble. After a long beat, he reaches for my hand again.
Come on, let's keep walking. I'll tell you more about Coach Death, and you can tell me all about how you French kissed your Timberlake posters.
I croak out a laugh. God, this guy. Just this guy. I want to thank him, kiss him, tell him how amazing he is. But all I do is twine my fingers through his and let him guide me back to the path. Chapter 22. Sabrina. The phone feels like a brick in my hands. I have to schedule the DNC soon or I'll be outside my window. I should have done it a month ago, damn it. It's nearly the end of February and I'm 15 weeks along. I don't know why I've let it go so long. Well, I do know why. Because I can't make up my mind. Half the time, I think I'll be better off without a child. The rest of the time, I can't get the image of Beau's casket out of my head. Wetness dribbles down my cheeks, and I swipe the tears away with an angry hand. Great, I'm crying in public. You would have thought I cried all my tears at Beau's memorial. That was hideously brutal. I knew it was a bad idea to study at Starbucks today, considering how hormonal I've been lately. But I didn't want to be at home in case I finally worked up the nerve to call the clinic. I still haven't told Nana about the pregnancy, and I didn't want her accidentally, on purpose, finding out. For the first time in my life, I feel like I'm completely without direction. I haven't seen Tucker since our day in the park, and I stopped answering his texts about a week ago. These days, I can't focus on anything other than the impending decision that's hanging over my head. And it's not just Tucker I've been ducking. I've only been to one weekly lunch with Hope and Karen since Beau's death. I blamed it on increased work hours, but I don't think they're buying it. Sabrina? My head jerks up. Joanna Maxwell is standing in front of my table. She's got a cup of coffee in one hand and a stylish white clutch in the other. Draped in a royal blue wool coat, she looks every inch the Broadway star that she's going to be. Joanna! I leap to my feet and give her a hug. How are you? Her bones feel about as sturdy as twigs in my embrace. I give her another squeeze before letting her go. She smiles wanly. Okay. What are you doing in Boston? Is your show traveling? No, it's still playing in Manhattan. A slow flush creeps up her neck. I quit. Shock silences me for a second. You quit? Yes, I had an opportunity to do something else, and I took it. Her words are a mixture of defiance and embarrassment, as if she's tired of having to justify her choices, which she certainly doesn't have to do with me. Well, good for you. But I'm confused, because when I hung out with Beau, he said that Broadway was Joanna's dream. Right? I'm young, so if there's ever a time for me to try new things, it's right now. Trying new things terrifies me, but I nod anyway because I'm not the girl who lost her beloved brother. I'm just the girl who's knocked up. Absolutely. What are you doing? I'm cutting a demo, she admits. I'm not part of the Briar Arts crowd, so I have no idea what she's talking about. Oh, cool. The bewilderment must show in my face because Joanna adds, it's pretty much a sample that I can send to various A&R people in the industry. They listen to it, and hopefully someone signs me, and I get a record deal. If that doesn't work, I'll sing covers and post them on YouTube, maybe try to gain visibility that way. It's all kind of up in the air. That's great, I tell her, but in my head, I don't understand. Why in the world would anyone leave a paying singing gig for something that seems risky as hell? If I had a good job right now, maybe I'd keep this baby. I think that if I'd gotten pregnant at the end of law school instead of the beginning, I'd view things differently. It's terrifying, actually. I had to get a job waiting tables, which I've never done before. But there's no other way to pay my bills. And by leaving Broadway now, I might never be able to go back. I stutter. The potential of losing everything I planned for all my life because of this pregnancy has paralyzed me. Joanna sounds like she purposely jumped off a cliff with no safety net. I hope you follow your dream, I finish lamely. That's exactly what I'm doing. She sighs. And despite what my parents believe, I'm not having an existential crisis because Beau died. In fact, he'd totally be on board with this, don't you think? Beau loved his sister, so yeah, if this made her happy, then he would have supported her. He'd want you to be happy, I agree. Joanna bites her lower lip. Did you know that Beau didn't really want to go pro? I mean, the team sucked last year and he had offers to go to other schools, maybe win another championship. That would have put him in a better position to be drafted, but he loved his team and he wasn't interested in playing at the next level. Beau was all about being happy. She starts to choke up, and I pray to God those tears don't spill over, because if she cries, I'm going to start sobbing too. Pregnancy has turned me into a weepy emo bitch. Then you should do this, I say firmly. I know. She wipes her face with her sleeve while I dig into my purse to see if I can find a tissue. There's a crumpled one in the corner, but it's clean, and Joanna gratefully takes it. He really liked you, she says in a soft voice. You guys could have made a great couple, but maybe it's better that you didn't fall in love with him. Her face collapses as the grief she's been holding at bay swamps her. Then you wouldn't be a mess like I am. Without a word, I guide her to the table, drag an empty chair next to mine, and then sit beside her while she cries. A few of the other patrons give us weird looks. I return their nosiness with a death glare. Fortunately, Joanna composes herself in no time. Soon she's blowing her nose and casting me a chagrined look out from under the veil of her hair. Fuck. I hadn't cried all day, she mumbles. It was a new record. If I were you, I wouldn't even get out of bed. I did that for the first couple of weeks, and then I woke up and thought, Beau would kick my ass if he saw me shitting my life away. So here I am, trying something stupid and new. Doesn't sound so stupid to me. And it doesn't anymore. Joanna is young. If pursuing a different career in music is her dream, better to chase it now than later. You really believe that? Of course I do. She stuffs the tissue in her coat pocket. Beau always said you were so driven. I figured this was the sort of thing you'd look down on. I frown. You make me sound like a callous asshole. No, I didn't mean it that way. It was a compliment. She pauses. I was the same way. I had everything planned out. I'd get a degree in performing arts, get a fantastic role in a Broadway play, and ride my star to the top of the marquee. Then Beau died and all of it just seems unimportant now. You know what I mean? I think I might. Anyway, I better get going. She leans forward and hugs me again. This time her grip is surprisingly fierce. Take care of yourself, Sabrina. I hope you live your life making yourself happy. Yeah, if only I knew what path that required. The next day I find myself in front of my advisor's office. Professor Gibson has her head bent over her desk, grading papers. I knock softly so I don't startle her. Sabrina, come in! She waves me forward with a welcoming smile. How's your last semester going? Easy. I know how to take a test now. Or you've trained yourself to think more critically and be able to parse through scads of information to find the simple tenets that underpin all theories? Or that. I laugh as I take a seat. Are you excited about Harvard this fall or looking forward to summer break? Harvard, definitely. I'm going to miss this place. I take in Professor Gibson's cozy office with its oversized stuffed chair that she gets recovered every 4 years, and the towering stack of books that threaten to tumble over at any second but never do. She has pictures everywhere, with her students, with her husband. And it hits me. The reason I've never thought about having kids is because from the minute I met Professor Gibson, I wanted to be her. She's smart, successful, kind-hearted, and so well-respected. Everywhere she goes, people look up to her. And for a kid like me from the South Boston slums, that sort of admiration was a dream, one that I've pursued relentlessly here at Briar. I don't know any female with a child who's as successful as Professor Gibson, which I know intellectually is wrong because there are thousands of mothers who are doctors, lawyers, bankers, and scientists. Even Hope and Karen talk about motherhood someday. But that someday is in the nebulous future for them, whereas it's right fucking now in my belly. Do you wish you had kids? I blurt out as I stare at the picture of her and her husband standing in front of some ancient castle. Professor Gibson narrows her eyes, and somehow she knows. I can see it in her face. Oh, Sabrina. There's a question implicit in her sigh. I nod. She closes her eyes, and when she opens them, all traces of judgment are gone. But I saw that initial flicker of disappointment, and it stings. Sometimes, she says in response to my question, sometimes I do, and sometimes I'm glad that I don't. I've been the special auntie to my brother's 3 kids, and that's filled most of my mothering instincts. I have my students, and that's tremendously fulfilling. But I won't lie and say I haven't wondered what it would be like to have a child of my own. Do you think I can do it? Have a kid and make it through Harvard? She makes a small, sad sound at the back of her throat. I don't know. Your first year is time-consuming and overwhelming, but you're very smart, Sabrina. If there was anyone who could do this, it would be you. But it may mean sacrifices. Maybe you don't graduate summa cum laude. I wince because being at the top of my law school class is definitely one of my goals. Or law review. I swallow a moan of dismay. But you'll still be a Harvard grad. I have no doubt about that. She pauses. What does the father say? It's up to me. He supports me either way. The smile that spreads is genuine. Ah, you've got a good one then. I do. Tucker has been very good to me, and that's part of the problem. If I keep this baby, I'm impacting his life in 1,000 different ways, and not all of them are good. I'm sure you'll make the right decision, whatever it is. Thanks. I pushed to my feet. I know that this is weird, me coming to you, but my mom... I trail off. I'm glad you came to me, Professor Gibson says firmly. I thank her again and leave the office. I know I should talk to my girls, but they'll say the same things as Professor Gibson. In fact, the reason I went to her was because I thought for sure she'd tell me to get the abortion. 5 minutes later, I sit in my car, staring unseeingly at the dashboard. I miss my mom right now. She was hardly ever around and we weren't close, but she's still my mother and I wish she were here. I want to know why she kept me when she clearly didn't want me in her life. When I get home, I pull out a sheet of paper and start listing the pros and cons. Halfway through the cons, I tear the sheet in half and throw it away. My answer has been there all along. I didn't need to see Joanna or Professor Gibson or commune with my absentee mother. The fact is, I haven't scheduled the abortion because I don't want to get one. It might be the best option, but I've spent my whole life feeling unwanted. I tuck a protective hand over my still flat stomach. A smarter girl would get the procedure done, but I'm not that smart girl. Not today. Today, I'm keeping it. Chapter 23. Sabrina. I lie in wait outside Tucker's 11 o'clock class. Rather than ask him when we could meet up, I stalked him online and found a post on the Briar Yik Yak that had all of the players' schedules. That's not creepy. As students stream out of the ivy-covered building, I recognize maybe 1 in 30, if that. My time at Briar is coming to the end, and I don't have much to show for it. Some kids graduate with a raft of friends that they carry into their postgraduate life. Me, I've got my degree, Karen, and Hope. And now a baby. I guess the baby outweighs the entire sisterhood of a sorority. Tucker strolls out with Garrett Graham. They're both gorgeous, but Tucker is the one who commands my attention. Not that Graham isn't good-looking, but Tucker's all I see. He shaved his beard. I don't know how I feel about that. I liked the beard. But I can't deny that his clean-shaven face is equally appealing. He's got a dimple in his chin that was hidden by all the scruff. God, I want to explore that dimple with my tongue. The rest of him is equally tempting. He's wearing a tight, long-sleeved knit shirt with one corner tucked into the side of his jeans. A pair of sunglasses is perched on the top of his auburn head, which is thrown back as he laughs at something Graham is murmuring out of the corner of his mouth. Behind them trails a line of hungry girls who desperately want the attention of these guys. But they're both more interested in exchanging quips than scoping out the women. A flutter of relief washes over me. Since the night at the hotel, we haven't slept together. There was the pregnancy discovery, and then Beau's death, and then Beau's memorial, and then... nothing, really. My head hasn't been in a good place since New Year's. I bite my lip. I didn't want to drag him down with me, but that's exactly what I'm doing. He cuts off mid-chuckle when his eyes land on me. His lips move, saying something like, "I'll see you later, man. I've got something to take care of." Garrett's gaze swings toward me, and he probably says, "She's going to suck your soul out. Stay away from her." Tucker's lips curve up. He's either replying that he can handle me or likes the way I suck, or maybe even too late. As he saunters toward me, Garrett's glare moves from Tucker's back to my face. I smile wide, showing little teeth.
"You're avoiding me,"
Tucker murmurs when he reaches me. I switch my attention to him, tuning out Garrett, the adoring girls, and the rest of our classmates. They're a distraction, and I owe it to Tucker to be focused. "I've had a lot on my mind," I admit.
"Yeah, me too."
When he quirks up an eyebrow, I tilt my head toward the crowd. "Got a moment?"
"For you, always."
My heart squeezes. I've been AWOL for weeks, and he still finds a way to look at me like I'm the only girl in his orbit. I don't fucking deserve him. He takes my elbow, and I follow him toward a row of benches along the quad. "You seeing anyone?" I ask in the most casual voice I can muster. He stops so abruptly that I nearly take a header on the cobblestones. He hauls me upright, planting both hands on my shoulders to orient me so I'm facing him.
Are you kidding me with that?
You stopped texting me. I hate the uncertainty in my voice. His expression softens.
I've been giving you space.
I force a shrug. It'd be okay if you were. A muscle in his jaw jumps, and the grip around my shoulders grows uncomfortably tight. Okay, I pegged that one wrong. Finally, he sighs and pulls his sunglasses on.
No, I'm not seeing anyone.
Under his breath, I hear him mutter,
apparently not even you.
I'm sorry, I blurt out. It wasn't meant to be an insult. I just wanted you to know that this, I wave my fingers in a circle around my belly, shouldn't be holding you back. His features tense again.
I need some food before we continue this conversation. Come on.
Where are we going?
Somewhere private.
He doesn't break stride, even as he redirects us from the lecture hall toward the parking lot behind the building. A number of people wave to him as we pass, but he doesn't stop for any of them, nor does he talk to me. When we reach his pickup, he nudges me into the passenger side and then stares expectantly at me. What? I mutter.
Seatbelt.
I'll do it when you get in the truck.
Now.
Is this because I asked if you were seeing anyone? The jaw muscle moves again.
No, it's because you're pregnant.
An eyebrow creeps above the rim of his sunglasses.
You still are, right?
I flush, but I guess I deserved that. Yes, I wouldn't do anything without telling you first.
Good. Buckle your seatbelt.
I do as he orders because it's obvious we're not moving an inch until he hears the click. Then I hold my hands out and say, okay? He nods and shuts the door. We don't say a word as he starts the truck and leaves the lot. He drives us about 3 miles away where we pull to a stop in front of a small outdoor rink. The ice is melted and instead of skaters, the rink is filled with picnic tables. Only a few people, none of them students, occupy the tables.
Why don't you grab a seat?
Tucker says as he helps me get out of the car.
Want anything to eat? Drink?
I'll take water. He heads off to the concession stand while I claim a table in the far corner, situating myself so I can watch Tucker stride across the pavement. If I had to choose the father of my child, I couldn't have done better than John Tucker. He's gorgeous, tall, athletically gifted, and smart, but most of all, he's decent. No matter what happens in the future, he'll never turn away from his kid. He'll never make him or her feel unwanted. He'll never threaten his or her life in any way. No matter what happens, even if I screw up, and I know I will, Tucker will be there to clean up my mess. It's because he's so good and decent that this decision to keep the baby was so fucking difficult. If I'd gotten the abortion, I think he would have grieved, but now that I'm keeping it, his life will be forever changed. And it'll be because of me. I keep having to remind myself of that. I can't rely on him too heavily or ask too much from him because he'd give me everything without complaint. But I'm not a taker and I'm not a user. It would be so easy to fall in love with Tucker and allow him to take care of everything. It would be easy, but not fair. A minute later, he settles into his seat and pushes a water bottle across the table. He bought himself a hot dog and a coffee, and neither of us speak as he quickly inhales his food. Once he's done, he balls up his napkin and shoves it in the empty hot dog container. He tucks his sunglasses into his neckline, curves his large, capable hands around his coffee cup, and then waits. It's my show. I lick my lips once, twice, and then just go for it. I'm keeping the baby. His eyes flutter shut, hiding whatever emotion that washes over him. Relief? Fear? Unhappiness? When he flicks his lids up, his gaze is clear and expressionless.
How can I help?
A reluctant smile surfaces. Such a Tucker thing to say, which reinforces my resolve to make sure that he suffers almost no burden and that he's free to find whomever or whatever he wants in the future. The minute that he wants out, I won't fight it. I'm good for now. I actually have insurance through my postal job. I've been working there since I graduated from high school. I used to grumble about my health premium since I never used it, but now it's coming in handy.
All right. So healthcare is taken care of. What about after you have the baby? You still going to law school?
Yes, absolutely. The thought of quitting hadn't even occurred to me. It's like college. You have 3 or 4 hours of classes a day. The rest of the time, I'll be home studying. His mouth thins out in the first sign of any kind of emotion.
With your stepfather?
It's hard not to flush with shame. He's an asshole, but he's never touched me.
That's not much of an endorsement.
I roll the water bottle between my hands a few times. Tucker waits me out. He's got more patience than a saint. I had to quit my job at the club, I say quietly. I was banking on that money to help with my law school tuition. I can't afford to live anywhere else than where I am now. Plus, I'm hoping that Nana will watch the baby when I'm at school.
What about me? Do you trust me?
My head jerks up to meet his slightly frustrated expression. Of course.
Then why don't I take care of the baby while you're in class?
Because you've got to get a job, right? Nana doesn't work. She lives off her Social Security money.
Tucker rubs a hand across his forehead as if the enormity of the task we're about to undertake is finally settling in.
Right. I need to find a job.
You haven't found a business yet?
There are dozens of them, but if there's anything I learned about business management, it's that if you don't love what you're doing, it's bound to be a failure.
He takes a sip of his coffee.
I'll sign on to a construction crew for the summer. I've done that in the past, and it's good money. During my time off, I'll keep looking at different opportunities until I find the right one.
So until that time, it makes sense for Nana to help. He thinks it over, but he can't come up with a better solution.
For now. Until we can find something better.
He pauses.
I need to tell my mom. And my teammates.
The churning that starts in my belly has nothing to do with the pregnancy and everything to do with embarrassment, which triggers a jolt of self-directed annoyance because getting pregnant isn't some horrible, shameful occurrence. I'm an adult. I'm having a baby. That's not a big deal. Will you wait a bit longer? I mean, I'm okay with you telling your mom, but can you keep it quiet with your friends for now? I hesitate, then confess. I haven't told anyone.
No one?
He says, incredulous. I nod miserably. You're not the only person I've been avoiding. I've barely seen Karen or Hope.
So you admit you're avoiding me?
I can't look him in the eye. Instead, I pretend to be fixated with the wood grain of the picnic tables. I want so badly to tell him how much I've missed him, because I have. I've missed kissing him and joking around with him and hearing him call me darling in his southern drawl. I've been a largely solitary person my whole life, avoiding Nana and Ray when I could. At Briar, I made friends with Karen and Hope, but didn't feel the need for a bigger, more extensive circle, so the acute loneliness brought on by not seeing Tucker took me by surprise. But how can I be with him knowing that I'm the one who turned his whole world upside down? The weight of guilt would crush me more than the weight of loneliness. I take a deep breath, pushing out the words that I don't want to say. If you want to see other people, you can. I'm not going to, I don't have time for that, but if you want to, I don't mind. Silence falls between us. A long finger finds its way under my chin and lifts it up until I either have to shut my eyes or stare into Tucker's. I choose the latter, but it's impossible to read his expression. He gives me a long, contemplative look before saying,
"How about this? I'll tell you if I've found anyone new. And you and I, we can just be friends."
He gentles his tone.
"If you decide you want more, we can talk about it then."
"Friends?" I echo faintly. "I'll take friends." And then because he's so decent, I blurt out, "I've never had a boyfriend. I only..."